All righty, I am going to call this special informational meeting on the proposed 2025 budget presentation to order. It is November 6, 2024. I call the meeting to order. All right. Could everybody please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? Clerk, could you read the announcements, please?
Can. Fire evacuation plan. Please note that in the event of an emergency, the fire department has requested that legislators and all others move at least one block away from the county office building in order not to impede the firefighters in their duties. Cell phones, please silence cell phones for the duration of the session. And microphones, please be reminded to use your microphones when speaking so you are recorded for the official record. There will be question and answer time. So in order to hear everybody, we just need the microphones. Roll call. Clinton. Here. Collins.
Here.
Corcoran. Criswell.
Here.
Donaldson.
Here.
Gavaris.
Present.
Green. Hansett. Harmon.
Here.
Hewitt. Kitchen. Kovacs.
Here.
Levine.
Here.
Litz. Lopez. Maloney. McCullough.
Here.
Nolan.
Here.
Roberts. Sperry. Stewart.
Here.
Uchitel. And Walls.
Here.
There are 13 present and 10 absent.
Thank you. We are going to move right into the business of the meeting, which is the presentation by Capital Market Advisors, who will introduce themselves and get the ball rolling for us. It's your floor.
Good evening. Can everybody hear me okay? Excellent. Thank you. As mentioned, I'm with Capital Market Advisors. I have my colleague here who I'll introduce very shortly, but we're here this evening to conduct and provide the findings of an analysis and review of the 2025 executive budget of the county. This marks our fifth year having this opportunity to come and to visit the county and to conduct this review. We enjoy it every year, so we're very grateful to have come here for these past 5 years and for the opportunity to come this evening and to speak and to answer questions. As we go through the findings today, we're going to break this up and, you know, kind of go through the report in the order that it's in, looking at the revenue sources, expenditures, fund balance, things of that nature. I'm sure there's going to be a number of questions. We're going to ask that those come at the end, and Tom and I will be up here present, and we'll be, hopefully be able to answer all of those questions this evening. To the extent that there's information that we have to do additional research or analysis on, happy to provide, you know, feedback. One of the great things about this engagement is we want to provide ourselves and make ourselves available to you. So to the extent as you're going through and reviewing our documents, reviewing documents provided to the county, we do hope that you'll come back and highlight some additional topics if you'd like, you know, more research, more analysis, if you want us to dig deeper into something. There are so many different aspects and areas of the budget. We try our best to incorporate those, you know, our findings into the report that you're looking at, but certainly there's going to be intricate details that you yourselves as a legislator, you know, might want some additional information on. So again, please, you know, certainly feel free to reach out. You know, Amber has our contact information and she can certainly field questions over to us. Our working team, as I mentioned, my name is James Nyko with Capital Markets Advisors. I'm here tonight with my colleague, Tom Visakis. This is two of the members from our team, but there's certainly other members of our team which are not here with us tonight, but they've worked very closely on this analysis and they've, you know, done a lot of, you know, put a lot of effort into it. Some of those folks are mentioned on the screen here. Margaret Guarino is the managing director of our group. Jack Anito is one of our colleagues who does a lot of the research and analysis, and also Len Bernard, who's not with us tonight, but again, worked very hard on this. Our primary contacts, which I know everybody's familiar with, but it's Amber and Natalie. They're excellent. They provide us with information all the time. We're in contact with them throughout this process. So again, some of the focal points as we're conducting our review, we have them listed up here on the screen. The primary areas that we're looking at is, you know, what is the process of the budget? How is it adopted? What practices are being utilized to do that? There are a number of best practices that are out there that surround the budget. So we're trying to see, are those being incorporated into the county's process? Are you doing some of those? Are there areas that could perhaps be stronger? Could you strengthen them? We try to point those out to you. So that's one of our primaries. Certainly looking at your revenues, those are a very, very important area, you know, as a local government. So looking at things like sales tax, real property taxes, your key revenue sources, departmental incomes, even one-shot types of revenues, grants and things of that nature, are they being utilized properly? Are your recurring revenues, those that are coming in year over year, being utilized to pay for recurring expenditure sources? That's what keeps your budget stable. So we're looking at things like that. Expenditures, how do they match, again, those revenues that are coming in? We try to look at things like healthcare benefits, employee salaries. Are they being budgeted appropriately? Or, you know, trying to just try to figure out how those two things combine together. We do a test of budget variance. And essentially what that means is we'll look at prior year budget documents and your actual results. And we try to see, well, are you missing the mark consistently in certain areas? Are you right on the mark? Is there any trends that are developing with that? And we want to highlight that to you because it's important to understand the past and how the budget has occurred to make predictions for the future. So it's kind of a multi-year approach. So that's why we look at things. We do a budget variance test. We look at fund balance. It's your rainy day funds. It's the cash that's in the bank. What are the trends with that? Also, a very important item. If you need to pull on those funds for an emergency, for whatever the case may be, we do conduct an analysis and we review that. We look at your outstanding debt levels. How are you issuing your debt? How do you compare against peer jurisdictions? How much debt do you have outstanding? What are your plans in the future? It's another area that we are looking at. Kind of connected to that, but we did break it out separately, is your capital planning process, your capital improvements. There is a capital plan that's, you know, put out on an annual basis. We go through that. We try our best to go through that process to understand it, to look at it. And you will see a section specifically in your report about that. Fiscal policies and internal controls. I mentioned before, there is a lot of best practices out there. You'll probably hear us mention it a couple times this evening. There's an organization out there called the Government Finance Officers Association, otherwise known as the GFOA. So when you hear me referring to them tonight, I'll probably be referring to them as the GFOA. That's the primary organization that, you know, really puts out a lot of best practices surrounding the budget, fiscal policies. It's a wealth of resources. And Tom, I think there's like 20,000 members roughly across the United States. Don't hold me to that. It's a lot. And they, you know, they're, again, just a wealth of resources. So you'll probably hear us mentioning them tonight. But that's why we also, you know, put in here as one of our primaries, looking at those fiscal policies to make sure that your finances are being governed in the most appropriate and the best way possible. Some of the secondary items that we look at, we do a department level analysis. You'll see in your report that's listed under Appendix A. It's a breakdown of the departments. In prior years, and I will mention this in a minute, but we have, you know, had the ability to come in and sit down and have conversations with department heads. This year is a little bit different. I know that the legislative committees were conducting some interviews, and we felt that it was appropriate to, you know, to watch those. So we did have access to those, and it, you know, kind of met that same need for us. But we do that as a secondary level, which is why you'll see it as Appendix A in your reports. We also do a look of your demographic and social economic environment. So it's a lot of census information. It's important to understand when you're looking at the budget and making decisions, what are some of the driving factors behind that? So you will also see, I believe it's Appendix B in your budget review, a breakdown of our analysis for that. So what is our actual approach? We try to look at physical documents. We're looking at the budget, obviously. That's the primary one for 2025, the executive budget. But we look at prior year documents as well. Other budgets, you know, adopted budgets, amended budgets. We'll look at audited information, unaudited information, if it has actual results. There's a handful of information. Anything that's out there that we're able to put our hands on and to look at, if we feel that it's valid for our review, we're certainly going to go through it and try to link it into our reports. We do look at county resolutions from time to time, policies that are being passed, any news releases or press releases that are relevant to, you know, the budget document and any decisions relating to the budget we're reviewing. It's important to note, too, we're looking at not just at the county's documents, but we also try to do a lot of benchmarking. So we'll look at, well, what are other counties doing? What are your peer jurisdictions? Other counties perhaps in either, the Mid-Hudson region, perhaps the state of, the entire state of New York. What are they doing? Certainly there's going to be some differences, and the decisions that they need to make are going to be different than yours. But it's important to understand, what's driving them so that you can understand, where you stand. And you'll see throughout the report in each of the, at least the revenue and expenditure sections, there are some peer benchmark tables that are updated. The most relevant information for that, or the most available information, is from 2023. So those have been updated through that point in time. We try to also look at not just tangible information, but non-tangible. What's behind the stories going in, what's behind the budget itself. That's why we had come and sat with department heads at points in time. That's why we want to sit down and review the committee interviews that are publicly available online, because it's important to understand some of those driving factors that maybe aren't necessarily in ink, but there's a story to them. We have conversations with peer jurisdictions. We will reach out to other counties, other local governments, even towns, cities, things of that, trying to get a better understanding of what's going on with them as well. And we're constantly reviewing literature and research and those best practices, the information that's being put out by GFOA, by the State Comptroller's Office. There's a whole host of resources that we're constantly trying to review and abbreviate it and work it into our report as it's applicable. We do consider, economic conditions, what's going on externally in the market, where's inflation, what's the political environment, where do we expect interest rates to go, are there employment concerns, attracting new employees, what are some of those factors beyond that? So we're trying to, understand the global economy and try to wrap that into how does that affect your local economy here in Ulster County? And then what do we actually do to put the numbers together? We do several different things. One of the first being a trend analysis. So we're looking at historic data, trying to construct an idea of, again, where you've been in the past, because that's a large driver of where you're going to be in the future. That benchmark analysis, looking at your peers that I've mentioned at this point a couple times, and those budget variance tests, which I had also mentioned previously. Let's start to discuss now some actual numbers, and we're going to start with the revenue section. Certainly, there's some economic risk right now. We know that that's probably going to continue throughout 2025, why? There's a lot of unknown factors. We do know that there's going to be some changes in government. There's going to be new policies coming into place, so we want to make sure that that's understood and that we're looking at it and trying to consider, well, how could that impact the budget and the decisions going into the budget now. The one, we don't know what those policies could potentially be. We just simply know that there's going to be some level of change. And how do we best position ourselves to make certain that we're, out there and able to accommodate those changes, those possible changes? We want to limit the risk, essentially. I'm going to say this probably a number of times tonight. You want structurally balanced operations, meaning that year over year, you have that understanding and that knowledge that you're solid. You're not balancing the budget with just one-shot items, things like that, whereas if you don't have those monies coming in, it creates a hole and it creates a problem. We wanted to talk a little bit about sales tax. Sales tax is the largest revenue source for the county by far, and that's common. That's not just for Ulster County. And pretty much any county across New York State, you're going to see sales tax is one of their primary sources of revenue. One of the things to make certain that you understand about sales tax is it can be extremely sensitive to changes in the economy. How are people spending their money? Say, for instance, you have the Mall of America decides to all of a sudden uproot and plop themselves down here in Ulster County. That would be a great thing in terms of sales tax because it's going to shoot through the roof. But conversely, if something else happens, which we saw a few years back, we had the pandemic unexpectedly. Everything was uncertain at that point in time. We didn't know what consumer spending would be, and that can have a very large impact in terms of the sales tax revenues that are collected by the county and ultimately how your revenues are going to meet your expenditure sources. We conducted a three-point approach to our look at sales tax. We wanted to understand, well, where do we think sales tax is going to end this year, And what do we think about the projection next year? We looked at information year to date. We looked at prior years to try to, you know, we can only gather information for a certain point of this year because 2024 is not complete yet. So then we looked at prior years as well to try to understand, well, over these last several years, for those months that we're missing now, where has it generally been? And we tried to do our, you know, make our, we based our methodology on that and tried to make assumptions and estimates to close that gap. Our findings showed that for 2024, we believe that the county is really going to hit its amount, probably exceed slightly what it has been. We did want to have some caution as it relates to 2025. We did feel that the dollar amount that was in the budget is probably generally appropriate. We felt that it was conservative and, you know, a fair amount. But we want to consider future years as well. You know, as we've seen in the past, sales tax has come in higher than expected. And, you know, we've also feel that, you know, kind of it's almost narrowing. So at some point, you know, it's going to come down to a point where if it doesn't hit that mark, it could be problematic for future years. So we just wanted to caution that. Again, we felt that it was a conservative number in there, but just something that should be considered. Moving on next, one of the primary sources of revenue is real property taxes. We wanted to discuss the formation of the real property tax levy. So the tax levy is the amount of funds that you're going out to the taxpayers and having them pay. One thing that we note is the tax levy has been held consistent. This is the third year straight now, dollar for dollar, that it has been that it's been consistent. And to us, it would almost appear that the construction of the budget is you're holding the tax levy consistent, and then you're forming things around that. If you look at GFOA best practices, the approach to budgeting, generally what you're supposed to do is you don't look at your tax levy first. You look at your non-property tax items, departmental incomes, your sales tax, things of that nature. Then you look at your expenditures, and you put those two together, and you try to determine, well, what's the gap? And perhaps the gap is, you know, $4 million, whatever the case may be. That's generally what you utilize, you know, that's how you kind of develop your tax levy at that point. You try to fill the gap. Perhaps you're going to utilize some fund balance, you know, to offset it. One of the things that was kind of striking to us and the reason that, you know, we came up to this was because we can see that, again, it was dollar for dollar, the same for 3 years. And the appropriated fund balance, which is a large number, Tom's going to discuss that a little bit more, is also kind of an odd number. It was not, you know, typically you'll see, local governments, if they're utilizing fund balance, it's a round number, $4 million, $3.5 million, something like that. So to us, it appears that, you know, the process of looking at that sales tax revenue, that real property tax revenue, it seems a little bit strange. One of the other things that we wanted to mention with that, in New York State, there's a 2% real property tax cap. There's a lot of parameters around that. But essentially, at the end of the day, you're allowed to increase the tax levy without, you know, having to pass resolutions and things of that nature up to that level. We noted that the county hasn't done that. Again, this is the third year straight. You haven't taken advantage of even moving it up. So you're below the tax cap, but moving it up. And it's not problematic at this point in time. But what we wanted to bring to your attention is, you know, 3-4 years down the line, if some of these other revenue sources, sales tax starts to dip down, real property taxes is your second largest source of revenue. And it's the largest source that you have full control over because you're determining what that levy is. So by not taking that up to 2% each year, if you think about it, it's 2%, 2%, 2%, 3 years down the line, if you need to increase your tax levy by, say, 10%, well, you've missed out now on, you know, kind of that incremental increase. So it appears to be a much larger hit at that point in time if you need to increase, your taxes at that point. So we wanted to bring that, you know, just the attention. One of the other things kind of on that line is the property tax cap itself. So it's a multi-step process if you decide that you wanted to exceed the tax cap. And I know we have discussed this in prior years' recommendations as well. We always recommend at least passing the resolution to exceed the cap, even if you're not. Even if you're keeping it, if you decide to keep it dollar for dollar, you don't have to exceed the resolution by just adopting it. What it does, though, if you approve a resolution saying you would override it, it demonstrates your willingness to do what you need to as a local government, to support your budget and to make sure that, you're going to meet your expenditures and any obligations that you have. And it's, there's several stakeholders involved with your budget, right? You have your residents, you have your small businesses. The folks that could be interested in this, though, is, places like credit rating agencies, right? They're looking at it as well. So, it demonstrates to somebody like that, your willingness to take that step. So,
James, I'm going to interrupt you for one second. I see a legislator has a question. The team has asked if they could do their presentation. Please jot down your questions, and they'll take questions at the end. Thank you.
Thank you. That one's answered. All right. So moving on, our next revenue that we wanted to discuss was state and federal aid. One of the things that we noted is that the county is relatively heavily reliant upon state and federal aid. For 2025, it's roughly about, combined, it's about 27%. 24, I believe, is about 26%. So it's kind of a large number. And there's a couple things that we just wanted to make sure that we pointed out with that. The fact that we do know that there's going to likely be some, policy changes in this upcoming year, we want to make certain that we understand where your funds are coming from. And, we felt that it would be most appropriate to conduct some type of analysis, almost like a framework to kind of track through where your state aid's coming from, where your federal aid's coming from, what is the timeline, what do you expect to, receive over the next couple of years, how confident are you in receiving those funds. What you'd even be surprised is, you can sometimes look at state aid and you think, well, state aid is state aid, but sometimes it's not. It's a flow through from the federal government. So if you conduct an analysis like that, kind of can show you what's, I don't want to say at risk, but it gives you a better understanding of what's out there and how could it impact you. And, a good example of that is, say you have federal aid coming in to fund certain positions and you have those positions in your budget, but maybe the expectation is it's only going to come in for a period of 3 years or 4 years. We need to start thinking about, well, what's going to happen? Are those positions 3-4 years down the line, or are they going to be positions that we're going to have to fund in a different way? Are they positions that, we're not going to have anymore? So we felt that would be, a strong recommendation and certainly something that we would be happy and willing to assist the county with if you guys had requested us to help in that manner. So I think that's it for state aid. The hotel and motel occupancy tax, we do understand that it was recently raised, took effect this last February, 2024, is increased from 2% to 4%. I do understand that it's somewhat flat. We did conduct an analysis and, we felt that it was, generally appropriate, the amounts that were budgeted for it. With all of our revenues, we did say that this is an area that you should continue to monitor on a, monthly basis or a, very, very close basis just to make sure, particularly because this is, it is relatively new that you've had this increase. This is our first year of actual data. It's not even a full year because it just took effect in February. So it's certainly something that needs to be monitored, maybe closer than some other sources of revenue just because of the newness of the increase. The American Rescue Plan Act, otherwise known as ARPA, something that we wanted to bring to the attention of the county here, there's a very, very important deadline that's approaching with this. For anybody that's not aware of what the ARPA program was, back in 2021, the federal government made funds available as, almost in the form of a grant to local governments to help offset and mitigate the negative effects associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, both economic and the physical effects. The county received approximately $34 million of federal funds from that. And when those funds came out, there was a whole host of guidelines that followed with them, requirements, things you had to do for those funds. Compliance is a big part of it. One of the there's two dates that they had mentioned with it. One of them is a date in which funds need to be obligated, and that date is 2 months off. It's December 31st, 2024. You have to spend the funds in full 2 years from then, by the end of 2026 calendar year. But it's important to understand what that impending deadline means right now. One of the documents that we'd requested and received from the county is the most recent report that was provided to the U.S. Treasury. With these dollars, the county provides quarterly reports. So we were able to access the report for the third quarter of 2024. And basically the bottom line number of that showed that there's about $3.9 million that has not been obligated. Now, very likely those funds are in the process of being obligated. Those are just kind of raw round numbers that are shown on this report, but that is ultimately what's getting, you know, sent to them. So we just wanted to draw the attention to make sure that there's a plan in place. And I do understand that there likely is a plan, but everything's being done because, again, it's only at this point a little over a month and a half away. Tom and I work with other jurisdictions, you know, around New York State, and I've, you know, there is sometimes some confusion about, well, what is obligated? And there are very specific rules surrounding that in the Treasury's guidance and their guidelines. So it's not a matter of, you know, well, we think these are going to be obligated by the state. You want to just check and verify that it crosses all the T's and it dots all the I's from the federal's perspective of being obligated. Any funds that are not obligated by that date, you risk the possibility of a federal recoupment of those dollars. Is federal government actually going to do that and come through and take money? Nobody knows because this is the first time that they've ever had these funds out there, but you don't want to take that chance and you don't want to risk it. And again, the county may very well have a plan in place, but we just wanted to identify that as part of a report because of the dollar value that's there. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Tom, who's going to discuss some expenditures.
Thanks, James. So as James mentioned, the county has a greater level of control over its expenses than its revenues. A lot of revenues are user-dependent and could be somewhat volatile from year to year, whereas your expenses, you have a pretty good sense going into the year, the number of positions that are being filled, whether they're vacant, the level of expenses for supplies and operations on a month-to-month basis. So we just wanted to go through a couple of areas that either jumped out to us as concerning or somewhat concerning, or just to bring to your attention for further review. The first of which is the county's health insurance for 2025. So we did note that it looks like the county is expecting about a 5% increase in its health insurance costs for next year. Speaking with other jurisdictions, we noted that a lot of your peers are expecting much greater increases, sometimes upwards of 10% in their health insurance costs. We do understand that the county is self-insured, which may play a factor into that lower level of increase, but we did want to bring it to this body's attention and make sure that it was something that was looked into further and ensure that it's accurate and appropriate level of funding for next year, that costs aren't increasing to a greater extent and not being appropriated. As far as generally most of the other expense lines, you know, we found they were generally appropriate. Obviously, the health insurance, as I just mentioned, was a little bit lower than we would have expected, but by and large, the expenditure side of the budget did seem appropriate and reasonable based on where the county was in 23 and 24 to date. James touched on this a little bit earlier, but just wanted to reiterate, the creation of any recurring expenses for the county is just something that should be monitored fairly closely, especially if those recurring expenses are tied to grant funding, state aid, federal aid, something that may not be as stable as some other revenue sources, that the county is not building up expenses to an unsustainable level that are going to have to be funded through fund balance or property tax increases in the future. So we did note that the county is expecting to increase its positions by, in the budget document, it mentions 18. We counted 19 positions for 2025. It did appear that all of those positions are appropriating expenses for the full fiscal year, meaning that the county at this point is expecting 12 months of salary for each of those positions. In our experience, we wouldn't expect all of those positions to be funded from January 1st for the full year. So to the extent any of those positions are filled later in the year, that would be salary savings that would not have to be included in the budget, or we wouldn't expect to be included in the budget and should be appropriated accordingly. And in addition to that, there was one line item that was noted as payroll reduction attrition savings. And this was a negative expenditure, which struck us as odd. It's not something that we typically see in a municipal budget. We would expect if there was payroll savings that those expenses just would not be included in the budget from the prior year, and that they would be shown in the specific departments where those salaries are not going to be paid. For this, it was one line item without much explanation, so it was unclear what is included in that number, what positions the executive team is expecting to not be paid. It was just very ambiguous, so we wanted to certainly highlight that, make note of that. We think it should either be explained in greater detail, or it should be moved to a different line item where it's tied to a specific department and those positions are reduced there rather than this payroll savings. I just pressed the wrong button. Sorry about that. Again, and this was something that we actually noticed for the first time last year and noted in our report. It seems to have continued this year, so just wanted to bring it to your attention to ensure that it's rectified or some more explanation is included in the budget. On the topic of purchase orders, this is something we've brought up in the past as seeming to be lacking by the finance team, where purchase orders or encumbrances weren't utilized throughout the year, and it was a little bit unclear of how much the county had accrued or had expended at a certain point in time. That definitely seems to have improved in 2024, but from our analysis, it seems like it's could be utilized to a greater extent. For the contingency line item, it seems from 2024 to 2025, that amount has been decreased just with rising costs, the continued inflation in the economy. We would expect costs to continue to rise in the coming fiscal year and would expect a similar increase in the county's contingency line item, so something we think should be considered. As far as the expenditure variance in the county's budget, I think we've made note each year of our review that the county has historically over-budgeted expenses and come in under that number, which is great. However, the extent of that variance seems to suggest that there's excessive over-budgeting. Over time, it seems like that's improved, which is good. It means the budgeting is more in line with what the actuals are showing, but it still seems that there's a positive expenditure variance from year to year. And going back to what James had noted previously with the property tax levy that and the use of fund balance, which I'll get into in a bit, that's making it seem like there's a greater appropriation of fund balance than may actually be needed at the end of the day. And on that point, so the county is currently budgeting an appropriation of $18.4 million of fund balance for the 2025 budget, which is a significant amount. Even with that, the unrestricted fund balance levels would still be within the county's fund balance policy. However, the continuation of appropriation at that level is going to continue to draw on the unreserved fund balance and may not be sustainable year after year. So something that needs to be monitored closely, maybe adjusted, and in future years to try to reduce the reliance on appropriating fund balance and have a structurally balanced budget solely through recurring revenues and expenses. Moving on to the county's debt issuance, on an annual basis, it seems the county issues bonds and notes in November of each year. The issue with this is the county's putting out its proposed budget with estimates as far as its upcoming or some of its upcoming debt service payments. At this point, those bonds and notes should have priced, and we expect them to be closing in the next week or two on November 14th. We just want to ensure that the final debt service figures are properly incorporated into the budget. So having it priced and closed during the budget process each year kind of leaves that up for leaves that subject to change through the budget process. As far as the county's capital improvement plan, James touched on this briefly. We did do an analysis of open items, open bond resolutions that the county has not borrowed against. And there seems to be a significant amount of old resolutions that are still open. So we think further analysis should be done on whether any of those projects will be borrowed for. If they won't be borrowed for, if debt won't be issued against those, they should be rescinded, and basically more control over that capital improvement plan to ensure that there's not this, you know, openness for any projects that might be done in the future if the county has no plans of issuing that debt. So these are obviously the highlights of what we found in our review process. Our report goes into more detail on everything. There are more findings in there as you go through. As James mentioned, if anything comes up that you have questions about, we'd certainly be happy to get in touch with you. This past year, for the first time, we did do a mid-year report for the county, basically an assessment in over the summer of what the status of with our findings from last year's report and how the county was progressing. So we did provide that earlier this year, and just speaks to the ongoing dialogue that we'd like to have with this body and continue to provide service as best as we can. And with that, I would open it up to any questions that people would have.
Yes, Legislator Wells.
Obviously, the county determines how much to tax and how much to spend. And then there's cash on hand, which is, you know, appropriate, necessary. It's a good thing. Does your group have any recommendations on percentage-wise about how much cash on hand is too much or how much is too little as far as our budget and our budget goes?
Well, I would start with the county obviously has a fund balance policy in place for how much you feel is appropriate to keep on hand at any one time. OSC, the Office of State Comptroller, also has their guidelines as far as what's appropriate and how to spend down any maybe excess fund balance. That's more of a policy decision that we leave to you to figure out what is the best use of those funding.
I can jump in too. I think you'll see if you review like GFOA best practices, OSC, they do have guidelines out there surrounding it. They're a bit ambiguous. They don't, from what I've seen for the most part, they may like talk about, well, you should have this many months of, you know, excess in reserves, things like that nature. They don't really a lot of times give you like a specific hard number. I think one of the things that we look at, you know, particularly when looking at like fund balance and things like that, is we want to ensure that long term you're maintaining the structural integrity of your finances. So, you know, a good way to think about that is recurring revenues meet recurring expenditures. One-shot revenues better suited for, and there's going to be times that crosses over. It has to be. Fund balance, your rainy day funds, is an example of like a one-shot, you know, kind of revenue. You know, the county's in a very lucky position that they do have very healthy reserves. And local governments across the state use fund balance all the time. But when you see a large appropriation like that in your budget and you're closing gap, very likely, you know, even if with the $18 million in there, you're probably not going to, you know, need to utilize all of it. However, if you do, for whatever reason, then there's a good chance that, well, you know, the following year, you know, now your expenditures are kind of, they need that dollar amount. And are you going to need that $18 million next year to balance everything? That shows right away that you're not structurally balanced. You're imbalanced at that part because you're paying, again, those recurring sources with fund balance, which is really like a one shot. And then what happens, you know, once that fund balance gets eroded or goes away, you know, you got to come up with a way to close that gap in a different measure, if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Yes, thank you. It's really helpful to have this all laid out this way, and I appreciate that you bring us a perspective. On a couple of these items, I just hold a different perspective. In regard to the real property tax, for example, you say that there is an assumption that we're going to keep that steady and that everything seemed to revolve around that. I don't think that assumption is necessarily there or that that's an accurate statement when we have so much budget surplus, because you're going to show you have a surplus and then your next question is, do you need to raise the tax? And I think you make a good argument for long-term fiscal planning. There might be some reasons, but there are also political and other considerations. Sure. In terms of which sources of revenue are more burdensome to the population and which are, I'm going to call them, more progressive taxes. I do agree with you that we've had in the past that resolution to allow the override on the tax cap and then not used it, and that seems reasonable to me. But the idea that we just go up 2% or some other arbitrary amount to keep raising property taxes, I don't agree with. And I also don't agree that the property tax is really totally under Ulster County's control. How much the rate is under our control, but the amount that we bring in depends on ownership and appraisals and factors that are not really in our control, as I understand it. I also want to make a comment about the health insurance, where you point out that we have gone up less than surrounding municipalities, and I would just say that my understanding is that the motivation to become self-insured was because we might be able to spare the county some of those increases in cost, which may be going to administrative cost in the health insurance realm rather than to services for any individuals. And on payroll reduction, health insurance was pages 25 and 26, real property taxes 14 and 16. On 28, where you talk about the payroll reduction, that negative number, we do get notes in the departmental budgets of those savings, but instead of having it scattered all through everywhere, it has been helpful to me to see how much that total number is. So if you're recommending that it be in the departments for seeing where that is, which, you know, I could accept that, is there some mechanism that you would also propose that would help us, you know, maintain that total figure rather than this probably innovative practice of putting it in as a negative budget number? And if not, then I don't mind having something that we're doing in Ulster County that's different than any place else. It doesn't seem to me that it's causing any harm. So if I'm missing anything there, please bring that out.
Oh, well, to your last point, I think our recommendation would be, if it wasn't just dispersed throughout the budget departments, to have some sort of table or some visual graphic of what is included in that amount, whether it be by department, by position, however the county thinks is most appropriate, but just something that better explains how that number was accounted for.
Legislator Collins.
I'm going to talk about real property tax first on the revenue side. So My understanding of what you're saying about that is it looks like what the county has done in estimating revenues is to estimate the growth of sales tax and the growth of those other taxes, those consumption taxes, and then keep the real property tax basically the same as it was the prior year without looking at what we actually need. So that will end up increasing the overall revenue, and we may be able to not use as much property tax as previous years if everything else is increasing at a faster rate than the expenditures. Is that what you're saying? Does that make sense how I'm putting that?
Could you repeat that one more time?
Okay. Yeah, so, filed it fully.
so revenue is, you know, it's made of consumption taxes essentially,
yes,
and property taxes, right? So those together are the entire revenue. The expenditures are what the revenue goes to.
Correct.
If the consumption taxes increase at a faster rate than our expenditures, then the property tax should be able to be decreased to meet the total sum that we need for the expenditures.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes. I think that what it appears from our perspective is that the county is budgeting those projections of those user taxes before the expenses and may not be accounting. It may not be as realistic as they otherwise would be, because it looks like there is an effort to keep that tax level flat.
I mean, clearly it is. I mean, you look at the number, it's the same number year after year after year. Mm-hmm. The difficulty, though, from a political point of view, is if we do drop that significantly one year, and then the next year we need to go back up again, we're stuck.
Correct.
Because we can only go up 2% per year without doing, and this is a question, I don't know the answer at this level. I've been on the library board. We have to actually pass a resolution to go above that. Is that, mm-hmm, is that the case here also? Okay.
Correct.
I thought so. So passing a resolution is up to the taxpayers, and they may say no, and then we're stuck. So I understand the practice that the executive is using of keeping that where it's at and not dropping it, because we don't necessarily want to get into a hole. We have to increase it above what we can do normally. That's just my take on it. On the payroll reduction stuff, I agree with you. It appears that, and I think this might be a prior executive who may have done this, is it appears as if it's a slush fund. As if it's money that we know we're not going to hire people, so we have this extra money lying around, we're not going to hire people, and it makes the budget look better. I would love it to be tagged to the actual departments and tagged to where it actually was allocated for, so we can see what's not being used by department. I agree with that entirely. I like the idea of getting encumbrances ID'd and make sure that we either use them or stop using them. Take those away. And the same thing with the old resolutions that were passed. You know, make sure that if we're not going to ever use that money from resolutions in the past, we look at that and we cancel those. So I appreciate all those advices. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes, Legislator Stewart.
So I think what we're discussing with the resolutions is it's not necessarily cash on hand. It's more or less, say, for instance, you authorized a project for $1 million and you've completed the project, but you only spent $600,000. So there's a $400,000 authorization out there. It's not that you have the $400,000, you know, kind of in hand. It's just it's out there and it's hanging around. So it appears as though there's like an open project, you know, for that amount, and that there's an open, you know, resolution for that amount. So it's not necessarily cash on hand per se. It's more or less just the authorization of those funds.
Any other questions? Yes, Deputy Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question in regards to, I see here that, and I'm appreciative of the revenue benchmark analysis for sales and real property taxes to be able to compare Ulster County to, you know, surrounding counties in the Hudson Valley and Catskills region. The only question I would have is in regards to if that chart is not able to be provided for the hotel motel occupancy tax, because I think that information, if we were able to get a comparison on surrounding counties on you know, the tax per capita compared to the other counties within the region, I think would be very helpful. So if you don't have that information, is that able to be provided, or, you know, why that wasn't included in the report along with the real property and sales tax numbers? Thank you.
We'll double check that. We have a lot of information that's been received from the Office of the State Controller. Hotel and motel tax is something that's called a segmented tax, which means not everybody has it. So it is possible that there are some counties that don't do it, that there are some. We can take a look and see. We have information, I think, for all the counties in New York State. So we should be able to pull out who has it. So if we see, for instance, that in Mid-Hudson region, if there's not that many, we could still perhaps benchmark it, maybe go a little further out and look at, you know, counties either across the state or in the downstate region. So we could expand that out. But yes, I believe that we should have access to that information. We can provide it.
I appreciate that. And it's just, you know, because like even obviously for, you know, sales tax, different counties, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison when you're looking at different tax rates in the different counties.
Right.
So even if a county has you know, doesn't match us with exactly the percentage of the occupancy tax, I still think it would be helpful to at least get some numbers and a comparison. So thank you.
Legislator Nolan.
Yes, I'd like to add on to that. I thought that was an interesting table there. It's on page 13, the sales tax revenue benchmark. And the top three counties for sales tax per capita are Sullivan, Orange, and Ulster in that order. And then Putnam, Westchester, Dutchess, Rockland, who are considerably lower. And I have a theory about it, so I'd like to hear your theory, that what that table shows us is probably that Sullivan, Orange, and Ulster have more dependence on tourism as a factor in their economy, leading to sales tax revenue, whereas Putnam, Westchester, Dutchess, Rockland maybe have more either other business sectors or just residential living, so their sales tax is lower. That's just my sense of things. Is there any data that you can bring to it to help us understand why we are where we are in this chart?
Off the top of my head, I'm not going to provide a clear answer. I'm going to say it's something that we could conduct analysis and try to figure out. My guess is that it's extremely multifaceted. So there's probably a number of things going into that. And the number that you see there, to do the per capita, we base it on population. So, you know, that could play, you know, somewhat into it, your population versus densities in certain areas, and it's, you know, spread across the counties. There's a lot of information that is made available from New York State relative to sales tax, relative to the jurisdictions. So we could certainly go through it and see if we could try to whittle it down and, you know, kind of highlight some main reasons why there could be, you know, differences.
Well, Sullivan and Ulster certainly are more rural than the other counties listed here. And Orange, I would think, would be kind of the break point between the rural and the more metropolitan counties with more metropolitan areas. So that might be a large part of it. We just don't have the same, maybe, property base, tax base.
Yes, Legislator Tavares.
Sorry. So to go back to Legislator Collins before, so we need to get actual numbers, and thank you to our analysts over there for providing me them. Well, it is true we keep the property tax the same. What needs to be also mentioned is that we balanced our budget but last year for 2024 by taking it from fund balance. So I think what you're trying to say is that we should be increasing taxes and making up at least a portion of that difference, so we don't have this giant leap one year, slow growth rather than peaks.
That's correct. You know, part of our role in this process is to identify areas of risk or even outliers. You know, that's why we're, you know, we're talking about a lot about peers and things of that nature. So it's just a little bit different from what we see with other places. And I've worked with jurisdictions very close to here that have gotten into some issues with property taxes because they should have been raising. You're not in that same situation, so don't get me wrong, but you know, they should have been raising them and they didn't, and then you saw, you know, a couple of years online they had to come out with like a 20%, you know, property tax increase. So to avoid that, you know, that was, you know, what we kind of wanted to highlight is that risk of, you know, just again that flat nothing, where technically you could raise it a little bit each year, so then if something happens, a pandemic or something again, and it pulls out that fund balance and then you don't have it anymore, you don't want to have to go through and then, you know, a 10%, 8%, whatever the case may be. It's a harder shot at that point. And I do understand that, you know, there's a ton of perspectives, you know, that you have to consider in this. There's the politics behind it. There's, you know, the finances. There's several driving factors. So you have to have that balance point and what makes the most sense for the county. So we just want to highlight, you know, kind of some of those other areas so that you can make an informed decision in what you should do to put you in that, you know, best place moving forward with all of those things to consider.
Legislator Guevara's follow-up. And
yeah,
Legislator
so we, for 2024, we took $17.7 million out of fund balance to balance our budget. So one of those examples of potential expenses that could come up could be a market adjustment based on a salary study that is currently underway that we are going to have to find somewhere to get that money from. And while we certainly may be able to initially take it out of fund balance, perpetually that's not feasible or viable. So
correct.
Doing a slow growth in taxes helps us to mitigate that in the long run.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thanks.
It's maintaining that structural integrity long term. I used to work with a gentleman, and one of the sayings that he always used to have was there's only so much meat you can cut before eventually you're going to hit bone. And I always, you know, think that when I talk about fund balance, like, I don't know, it makes sense. You know, there's eventually if you start needing to use it and you're not necessarily in that position and you have very healthy reserves, it's just an area because it signifies that structural imbalance. So at the end of the day, the key point is to what can you do to maintain that structural integrity over a long period of time?
Legislator Collins.
I want to echo what this conversation was about. I became library board president for the Woodstock Library after, I think it was 4 years of them not increasing any property tax and not increasing any salaries. And by the time I got there, we were totally under a living wage for our employees. And so for, I think, 2 years that I was there, we had to increase above the property tax limit. And that was painful. It's painful for our, you know, painful to put that amendment in, painful to put that resolution in to try to get the vote done, and painful for our residents to look at that. So if we don't keep up with where we are trying to go salary-wise and living wage-wise through our taxes, we're going to have that huge jump at some point in time, and it's going to be painful. So thank you for bringing that up.
I want to find out if legislators take this material home and have further questions, what's the best way to get them to you through our website staff? Okay. So please take this home, enjoy it, nighttime reading. And then if you have further questions, please reach out to Natalie or Amber about this. Gentlemen, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for being here.
Utilized.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Alrighty, the next meeting. So we have two public hearings on the proposed 2025 Ulster County budget and the proposed 2025-2030 capital program. They're scheduled for Tuesday, November 12th, 2024, 6 p.m. at Platte Hill Public Library, 2047 New York 32, Modena, New York. Thursday, November 14th at 6 p.m. at the Mescal Hornbeck Community Center, 56 Rock City Road, Woodstock, New York. The next regular meeting of the Ulster County Legislature will be held on Tuesday, November 19th, 2024 at 7 p.m. in Legislative Chambers, 6th floor County Office Building, 244 Fair Street, Kingston. And that's the end of our business. Do I have a motion to adjourn? And a second? All in favor? I'm sorry. Yes. On the slide.
Those were last year's locations, I think.
Ah. Don't go to those places. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. Appreciate your focus tonight.